Don't Move a Muscle, the podcast has started.
Hello and welcome to Podtrivius Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. Your hosts for this podcast are me, Cassie.
And me, Joe.
This week we're talking about the fourth chapter in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, The Keeper of the Keys. As we said in the previous episode, we should be available now on all podcatchers, so iTunes, Google Play,
Podcatchers?
Podcatchers, yeah, that's what programs are called to get podcasts.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that before.
Okay, well, you're not in the biz. Like
I'm so sorry.
We should be available on all podcatchers, so iTunes, Google Play, Pocket Cast, Stitchers, whatever you're on, we should be on, and if you can't find us on there, send us a tweet or an email or whatever, and we'll make sure we are. We're going to dive right into our chapter discussion, and as always, we do a summary of the chapter before we get going. This week it's my turn because Joe went last week, and here we go. So last chapter ended with a bang on the door, and in this chapter we learn just who that was. Hagrid bursts through the door of the shack to wish Harry a happy birthday and to deliver his elusive Hogwarts letter in that order. Hagrid gets angry when he discovers that the Dursleys have been lying to Harry his whole life, and then informs Harry that he's a wizard and that his parents were killed by Voldemort. Voldemort tried and failed to kill Harry, hence the scar. Vernon insults Dumbledore, and Hagrid gives Dudley a pig's tail in revenge. Hagrid reveals that he was expelled from Hogwarts and then lets Harry sleep under his coat. That's a basic gist of it. And now we'll talk about the chapter a little bit more in depth.
So there's a big knock at the door and Dudley jerks awake and says, "Where's the cannon?" And J.K. Rowling beautifully writes, "He said stupidly."
Yeah, that was so just overt.
Yeah. Like,
there's no flowery framing to that or anything. It's just Dudley is stupid. Mm-hmm. Pretty solid.
And then Vernon comes running out with a gun, which we find out is what he decided to take on his run from the mailman. Yeah, so we find out that Vernon took a gun with him, which has a very short-lived life in the book. I enjoyed that Hagrid breaks down the door and puts it back up just as soon as he's on the other side.
Yeah, he's just kind of like, whoops, my bad.
I mean, he doesn't say anything yet.
No, he doesn't, but like, that's just, I picture that as his mannerisms, that like, this was a total accident, I was just trying to knock on the door, but I'm big.
I mean, they do portray that way in the movie.
Yes.
But
that, yeah, that's kind of body language that we have to infer reading the book, and I'm sure that we are informed in that by seeing the movie and seeing the way Hagrid is portrayed, and then of course just being familiar with Hagrid as the character of the gentle giant in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a little clumsy.
Yes. So Hagrid walks in and we get some physical descriptions of him. I think the most notable of which is that Hagrid, besides him being tremendous, the most notable of which is that he has eyes like black beetles. We do see a bit of a fascination with eyes in general in the Harry Potter series, particularly for Harry, and we'll get to that because we do mention that in this chapter. But I thought black beetles was an interesting little descriptor there.
Yeah, and I think it's shines like black beetles,
yes.
Which was, I don't think of beetles as shiny necessarily, but I mean, I can see like their reflection and at night maybe, but
yeah, I thought it was interesting. I did a little research. Some people speculate that it was to avoid confusion with having a black eye, so if she said like Hagrid has black eyes, that might indicate to some people like, whoa, Hagrid got punched in the face.
Yeah, or this was just a really tough trip for him. Storm debris.
Others kind of agree with you in saying that it's a glossy, shiny black that she's trying to indicate. And the final one that I liked was that somebody said that they associated beetly black eyes with being covered in dirt and dust all the time, which I think is probably true of Hagrid, given that he's the groundskeeper and apparently keeps living animals in his coat.
Yes, which I love.
Yeah, he pulls an owl, some mice.
Well, he doesn't pull the mice out.
Well,
it's just
they're there.
Be wary, you're sleeping with mice.
Yes. So that was great.
Yeah. I related his pockets of endless items to in high school. I wore cargo pants a lot and they would just be filled with candy. So
great.
I would just pick it out periodically.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of Napoleon Dynamite.
With the
tater tots in the pocket. Napoleon, give me some of your tots. No, go find your own. Such a great movie. Hagrid remarks that Harry looks like his dad, but has Lily's green eyes. This is absolutely something we're going to see ad nauseum throughout the series, that Hagrid looks like Harry looks like James, but has Lily's green eyes.
Yes, that's, if you miss it here, you're not going to miss it the eighth time this book, and it'll be repeated each book.
Yes, absolutely. The significance of that, I don't know. I feel like people can make something of like, ooh, green eyes and like color symbolism, and I absolutely think there's something there with that, but I think it's just kind of, hey, you're like your parents.
Yeah.
In a way.
And in a way, they're kind of using that as like each person that says that, oh, I knew your parents.
Yes. And it's kind of an introduction to the character in the past that Harry's not familiar with, which I think isn't really something that they touch on in the movies, that Hagrid seemed to know James and Lily pretty well.
Yeah. He's like a whole different section of Harry's life in the movies.
And I mean, I guess that could be as small as him just being at Hogwarts when they were at Hogwarts, not as a student. He was working at the groundskeeper at that point, probably. But I just think that's an interesting little factoid and kind of gives us some insight into Harry's very close relationship with Hagrid, that in a way it might be Hagrid missing Harry's parents, which we see definitely with later adults in the series that knew Harry's parents, that in a way they're trying to get back that relationship that was stolen from them.
Yeah, absolutely. But it seems like Hagrid is just so much more pure than like, oh man, you're like your mother.
Yeah, because he had that very, very intimate in the creepy sense, but like intimate moment of saving Harry from the wreckage as a baby.
I pulled you pretty much away from your mother's corpse.
You.
Okay, we don't have to leave that in.
No, I mean,
but
it's
like,
true.
I pulled you out of the rubble of your destroyed house after your attempted murder.
Yeah. And there's a really great line in the, this is jumping ahead a little bit. It's after Hagrid tells Harry the big whole story of what happened to his parents, but it says, Hagrid looked at Harry with warmth and respect blazing in his eyes, but Harry, instead of feeling pleased and proud, felt quite sure that there had been a horrible mistake. Which I think speaks to what we were saying about Hagrid having that very, very close relationship with Harry and really loving and respecting him in his own way. But I found that a really sad line for Harry too, that this kid has been, in all respects, abused.
Oh, absolutely.
His whole life. And that to have an adult treating him with warmth and respect is, he's like, are you sure you got the right person?
And I looked at that more towards, like, he wasn't sure he was a wizard. And that made me feel a little better and not just like, you can't be respecting me. But I love that Hagrid is looking at this 11-year-old with all this respect.
Yes. I think that the relationship between Hagrid and Harry is one of the most pure and loving in the series.
Yeah.
I think competing with one other character who we'll meet in a future chapter and who I love. Moving along to when Hagrid first comes in, it says that Hagrid held out an enormous hand and shook Harry's whole arm. I thought that was really funny.
Yes, his giant trash can sized.
Yeah.
Trash can lid sized hands.
Trash can lid sized hands, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not going to get into the baby dolphins thing again. We spent enough time.
Although in the chapter art, we get to see what those baby dolphin boots look like.
They look like regular boots.
Yes, but they're big. Like baby dolphins. I noted that Hagrid really thinks the Dursleys are great.
What?
We've got Dudley is a great lump and great puddin', while Vernon is a great prune and a great muggle.
Yeah, that is not.
No, these aren't compliments at all. These were just a line of insults. But I thought it was noteworthy that before every insult, it was a great.
Yeah,
blank.
But that's like saying you're a gigantic jerk, you know, the.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It was just, that was the only way Hagrid was insulting them.
Yeah, the pudding line I especially liked. I think it was either after he pulls out the birthday cake for Harry, which adorable.
No, it was the sausages.
Okay, but
he puts the cooked sausages down.
Yeah, it's adorable that Hagrid brings Harry a birthday cake. But yeah, Hagrid cooks up some sausages and puts them down, and Dudley looks at them hungrily, and Hagrid says, your great pudding of a son it's hard to read Hagrid's lines because he does have kind of a dialect in a way. I don't know exactly where to place it because I'm not familiar enough with English dialects.
Yeah, he's definitely got an accent that she tried to write in.
I think she does a good job of it. It's just tough to read. Me, an American, to read it. But he says, "Your great pudding of a son don't need fattening anymore, Dursley. Don't worry." Thought that was a sick burn on Hagrid's part.
Yes.
Yeah. And he also tells the Dursleys to go boil their heads, which is just another great zinger.
Yeah. I love in that same line, like, their whole protest is, don't tell him he's a wizard. Don't tell him he's a wizard. And in the same line of, go boil your heads, he goes, oh, Harry, you're a wizard.
Yeah, it's just so, like, cavalier. And the interesting thing about that line is that even if you're not in tune with the Harry Potter fandom, and if this is your first time through the books, you probably know that that line, you're a wizard, Harry, is so important and popular in just culture. But it's very interesting that the books do not say, you're a wizard, Harry. The direct quote is, Harry, you're a wizard.
Yeah, but that's also like in Star Wars, Darth Vader never says, Luke, I'm your father. Or, no, Luke, I'm your father. He never says Luke in that line.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, I mean, it's just this, but in I this case, it's more about he says, you're a wizard, Harry, in the movies and not in the books.
Yeah, I do think he does that in the movies.
He does, yeah. I felt a little betrayed, honestly, reading that. I'm like, wait a minute.
I think it works both ways.
It does. And this is just a word order thing.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. But also, just the way he says it, he had to address back to Harry.
Yeah, he's saying, like, go boil your heads, Dursleys. Harry, you're a wizard. Hagrid's great. So Hagrid gives Harry his Hogwarts letter, the one that Harry's been trying to read for a whole chapter now.
Yes, and it's addressed perfectly. It's so specific, but it's so vague. The floor, hut on the rock, the sea. Not any specific sea. There's no address to this hut.
Yeah, because the previous one was the cupboard under the stairs, but I think this one is funnier.
This is a lot funnier.
It's real good. And then the letter just goes on to say, Harry, you've been accepted to Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Please accept this. Blah, 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 blah. This is maybe a very nerdy thing that I'm about to bring up, but the letter is signed by McGonagall because she's the deputy headmistress of Hogwarts and Dumbledore had better things to do that day. I love in the Harry Potter books that, first of all, they write letters, which we talked about before, how excited, in the last episode, we talked about how excited I am to receive things in the mail, and notably to receive letters, which I still have never done. But I love that in some cases, I think in Hagrid's case particularly, they have a special font for Hagrid's handwriting. But even for the characters that they don't do that, they do have a special signature for everyone.
Yes, there is Minerva McGonagall's signature in that letter.
Yes, and I absolutely love that they do this because I think that handwriting has such a correlation to personality. So, like, later in the books, we find out that Ron has a very loopy, messy hand, like, script for his signature. Hermione's is very, like, tight and proper. So I just love that little detail in here. And McGonagall's is pretty nice too.
Yeah, it's just a very formal
thing.
Yeah, and it's not necessary to put in, but I love it.
Yes, yeah, I think that is a fantastic touch, and I'm glad that you can appreciate it too, that it's not just people who love fonts are excited by this.
I mean, you're kind of insane.
We'll see. Harry reads the letter, and then Hagrid's like, oh, we gotta answer Hogwarts, let him know that I got you. He says galloping gorgons, which I think is great. Gorgons, I think in Greek mythology, a gorgon is a woman with hair of snakes. There are three gorgons. Medusa is one of them, probably the most famous of them. Mm-hmm. The question I have here is that, are gorgons real in the world of Harry Potter? Or is Hagrid referencing Greek mythology?
Maybe. I don't think they're ever mentioned again, but
no, I can't remember any point that they are either, but just a little detail in there that I'm like, wait a second.
Now, before he says that, Harry reminds him to send the letter by asking, his first question after reading the letter is, what does it mean, they await my owl? Which I love. Hagrid answers by writing a letter and throwing an owl into a storm.
Yeah, she's very specific to write that he throws the owl into the storm, which is on one level weird for a man like Hagrid who loves animals, but on the other level, it's kind of like, these owls are amazing at delivering letters. We'll see that later in the series. Like, they don't need specific addresses. It can be just be the floor in this hut on the sea, and they presumably can weather horrible storms and do these things. So
yes, I don't know. Spent however long just in his pocket as well.
Too, this owl survived Hagrid's coat.
Luckily he didn't sit on that along with the cake.
Yeah, he just sat on the cake, and the cake seemed okay as well. So I think they use the word in the first chapter, but we didn't really talk about it, but Hagrid explains what a muggle is in this chapter, which of course is an important word in the Harry Potter series. A muggle is a non-magical person. Hagrid calls Vernon a great muggle, like Joe said earlier. I did look up kind of where the word muggle came from. It's derived from mug, which refers to a gullible person. J.K. Rowling added a syllable to soften the word, wanting to suggest both foolishness and lovability. She later learned that it had been used as drug slang and was a little disappointed by that, but she kind of ended, it was an interview, and she just said, like, oh, well.
Now, was it used as drug slang after she wrote the books or beforehand?
Yes, I believe so.
It was after?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I didn't look up what kind of drugs that it was, but this is a family-friendly podcast, so we're just going to leave it at drugs. Don't do drugs. Drugs are bad.
Don't do drugs, kids. Stay in school.
Yeah, because if anything, the Harry Potter series is a book about school.
Yes. Oh, so after Hagrid calls Dudley a great lump and Dudley runs off the couch, he hides behind Petunia, which I think is hilarious. Petunia was hiding behind Vernon, but just picturing big Dudley behind skinny little Petunia.
I'm kind of picturing that as, like, you know, in Scooby-Doo, when they all peer around a corner and, like, one of them is on top and the other one. Yeah, that's, I don't know. That's just what I thought of, even though that's absolutely not what's going on here. But
probably not.
Yeah. No. yeah. Dudley goes and runs and hides behind mommy and daddy. And this whole time, there's this kind of push and pull of Vernon being terrified of Hagrid and Vernon, like, working up the courage to try to tell Hagrid to, like, get out or stop talking or something.
Yeah, it's crazy how much he hates the wizarding world.
Oh, yeah.
To give him this courage just to say something ignorant or just oppositional.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, too, that Rowling uses the word courage, that Vernon worked up the courage to say something, which courage is definitely an important word in the Harry Potter series. We talked about it a little bit in the first episode about nobility and loyalty. And I think courage kind of fits in with that for this series. And I think it's interesting that we see here that courage isn't always a positive thing, that it's not just, you know, the courage to save your friends or say no when you see something wrong going on, that it's sometimes courage to speak your mind, and your opinions may not necessarily be that great, but it is still a courage in a way.
Yeah, it was still fighting the fear to yell at a giant.
Yeah. Just thought that was a neat little thing.
Oh, yeah. So while Vernon isn't talking, the rest of the family are just like kind of squeaking and
yeah, they're making like little noises the whole time and whimpering, which valid.
Oh, absolutely. If he came in kind of angry, if he broke down my door and wasn't talking to me, I'm not talking.
Nope.
Not even Harry really talks for most of it.
And I love that line that Hagrid crossed between being super loving and nice to Harry and then just being like, shut up, you guys over there. Like, he does remain pretty calm up until Vernon insults Dumbledore. But there's definitely this like complete switch that he does just between the two characters. In that,
right after Hagrid says that he looks just like his dad with his mom's eyes, Vernon comes up behind him and says, I demand that you leave at once. You're breaking and entering. Hagrid just says, ah, shut up, Dursley, you great prune, and casually bends his gun into a knot and throws it in the corner. Anyway, Harry, happy birthday.
It's great. I love Hagrid. Anything more before the Voldemort story?
Well, we see Hagrid make a fire We're not shown exactly how it's done. He uses his body to hide what he's doing, but presumably he's using magic and he's trying to hide it from the muggles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he makes a fire and makes some tea and some sausages.
Yes.
Being very British.
But then when he gets more angry, he stops caring about that.
Yes. It's
openly just casting a spell on their son.
Yes, he gives Dudley that pigtail. And so he later remarks to Harry that he was trying to transform him into a pig, but messed up.
But he was too much like a pig already.
Oh, Hagrid's great. And then Hagrid engages in a pretty big info dump where he tells Harry his origin story. Voldemort is this bad guy who was kind of rising to power in the 70s. Philosopher's Stone primarily takes place in 91, which isn't, I learned that well after I had read these books, that the series takes place in the 90s, and it, like, my world was changed after that for some reason. It's such a trivial little detail, but whatever.
But it's so irrelevant because the Wizarding World is just, like, out of the times. We're going to see that a lot more, but despite the fact that they're using owls to send them, they're sending letters instead of using phones, which are available.
It's this weird backwards thing with the magical world. Well, we'll definitely see that more later on. But so Voldemort was this bad guy who was rising to power in the 70s. He had this, or I guess they don't really talk about his motives yet in this chapter.
No, just he was bad and he was looking for power. He got more people just because they wanted power or out of fear.
Yes. And eventually Voldemort went after Harry's parents for reasons unknown. And he killed Lily and James and tried to kill Harry. Hagrid speculates that it's just to, you know, not leave any witnesses and clean up his work. We'll learn later on that there are extenuating circumstances for that. But so Voldemort tries to kill Harry and fails. The spell backfires or just fails in some way. Harry is left with a scar and Voldemort is, they don't really know what happened.
Yeah,
Hagrid says,
gone.
Like, some people say that he died. I don't think that that's true. I think he's still out there somewhere. And I think he makes a pretty keen observation here. He says, some say he died. Codswallop, in my opinion. Dunno if he had enough human left in him to die. Really cool little detail for something that we learn much later on in the series. But I think that that definitely tells us that Hagrid's not a simple guy. He has insight that is valuable sometimes.
And there's no real saying if that was necessarily his idea or Dumbledore's, but I think it's nice to just think that, like, Hagrid's got his own theories he's sharing. And,
I mean, this is a huge, pivotal, historical event for the wizarding community.
Yeah,
I would
pretty
think
much everyone's got their own theories.
Yeah, and I think it says a lot about Hagrid, too, and the definition of kind of personhood and humanity that Hagrid is saying, like, I don't think that you can reach a point, reach that point that Voldemort did and be considered
human.
A person.
Anymore.
A human anymore. So really interesting point there. The name Voldemort, this is the first time that we hear it. Hagrid is at first reluctant to say it, and Harry says, like, oh, well, why don't you just write it down? And Hagrid says, no, I can't spell it. And then says it out loud. But let's talk a little bit about the name Voldemort. And for this, I'm going to consult the Ultimate Unofficial Guide to the Mysteries of Harry Potter. We use this in the first chapter, and I don't think we've used it since, but it's by Gladriel Waters, and I'll have a full citation in the show notes, but she basically just goes through the Harry Potter series, the first four books, because that was all that was out at this time, and gives some interesting analysis and trivia. So, in French, the Dark Wizard's name, Voldemort, means flight from death, as in robbing or depriving death. So Voldemort has no intention of dying. And then there's another little bit. Nasty how Voldemort robs others of their life, yet wants to be immortal. The phonetics of his name create an image as well. Many of the Danish kings, long history of brutal conflicts with England, had the surname Voldemort, and Shakespeare even drew from them to create his character name Voltamand. I don't know where Voltamand is from because I have not taken a Shakespeare class yet, which is really bad for somebody who almost has an English degree. But some interesting trivia there. And I'll throw in a little bit of etymology of Hagrid's name as well, because I don't know where else to put this in the episode. Ironically, Hagrid's title of Keeper of the Keys in the French version, Le Gardien des Clés, I can't speak French, don't email us about this, can also be translated as Keeper of the Clues. definitely see that coming up later in this book, particularly.
Absolutely.
Yes. Hagrid's first name, Rubeus, is a phonetic variation of Rubius. It's spelled differently, but Rubeus isn't a ruby, meaning a red or ruby color. Seems like in J.K. Rowling's world, the good guys wear red. The name Hagrid may be a derivation of Haggard. The name also conjures up images of Chris and Dick Brown's Hagger the Horrible comic strip. Hagger is a burly, intimidating Viking warrior who, other than some plundering and pillaging for his day job, is a regular family man, powerless around females, and loves his dog and tankard. Is that Hagrid? And I think the answer is yes. There is also a little bit on the Harry Potter wiki that I want to read about. The Harry Potter wiki says, according to Rowling herself, the first names of Albus Dumbledore and Rubeus Hagrid were chosen based on the white and the red, which were considered essential mystical components of alchemy. Hagrid was given the red for passion or emotion, an earthy, warm, and physical man, lord of the forest. And this kind of supports an observation that Galadriel makes about why Hagrid was expelled from Hogwarts, which Hagrid mentions that he's not supposed to be doing magic because he was expelled. She asks why, because we don't learn exactly why in this chapter. We will learn later on. But she says, it certainly was not for lack of loyalty. Hagrid may look intimidating, but he is a very sensitive giant of a guy whose fragile emotions can get away from him at times, usually causing him to break into tears. Emotions are Hagrid's weakness and play an important role in all of the book's mysteries. This was just a small demonstration that no one should assault Dumbledore in front of Hagrid, and that we should never doubt Hagrid's fierce devotion to Dumbledore. I don't know if I agree with him breaking into tears necessarily, but I do think that Hagrid is definitely an emotional figure, and that's supported in the red, and red also being kind of indicative of loyalty and bravery in this series.
That's true. Yeah. One of the colors of Gryffindor, which is, no, let's not talk about that yet.
No, I mean, yeah, we people know what Gryffindor is. Listen, Gryffindor's colors are red and gold, and those are kind of meant to symbolize bravery and courage and loyalty. Although, interestingly, we don't know what house Hagrid is in. We never learned that in the series, and I think we can speculate that come Chamber of Secrets, where we learn more about Hagrid's past.
Are you sure we never learn?
Never learn.
Okay.
But with this big info dump that Hagrid does for us, we're presented with kind of the big mystery of the first few Harry Potter books. Why did Voldemort go after the Potters, and why was Harry able to survive? We're not going to get answers on that for a long time, but no. It's definitely one thing that I think keeps people reading to learn the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was what drove people crazy during that big gap between the fourth and fifth books.
Yeah, there was, I think it was 2 years, which doesn't seem like a lot, but I think that Rowling had been churning out books every year at that point. It might have been longer than 2 years. I don't know, and I don't feel like Googling it right now, but it was a big gap of time. And that was actually Order of the Phoenix was the first Harry Potter book that I read upon release.
Oh, okay, yeah. I guess you were old enough to kind of be caught up.
Yes. I had read the first four books several times over by the time Order of the Phoenix came out. And I remember very vividly, I have two siblings, and you know, we would have to pass the new Harry Potter books between us, and Order of the Phoenix, I think I got my hands on second, and I was carrying it around with me because we were out shopping with my mom. I was probably in middle school at this point. We were out shopping with my mom, and I'm like, oh, well, I have to bring the new Harry Potter book with me because I have to know what happens. And I remember I left it in an Ulta, which is a makeup store. And to date, there's a little smudge of lipstick on the outside of my copy of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
Oh, like when you went back and found it,
yes.
Someone had just put lipstick on it for some reason?
I don't know. I think I like left it on a table and it got on there somehow. But I don't know exactly what happened. But that
was how someone decided to test out the the sample.
Yeah, I think about that every time I pick up that copy. but we've gotten wildly off topic now.
Yes, absolutely.
So we do get that mystery that is going to continue throughout the next couple of books.
I did like, it might not be significant what Hagrid says. I don't have word for word right here, but basically he says that after Voldemort disappeared, people started coming back to our side. And he uses our side, not like the good side.
Right. Although he does use the term the dark side, and it's capitalized in this chapter. I don't remember that really being repeated throughout the series. Maybe it has been. The but that was very Star Wars to me.
Yes.
But yeah, our side is definitely significant because that kind of indicates that Hagrid was on some level on the side of the good, in air quotes, not to be very black and white about it, but the side that was fighting against Voldemort.
Mm-hmm. But I also looked at it as like as a way not to have it black and white, just like this was our side. That was
okay.
The other side. He wasn't saying like we were the good guys, which I mean. Yeah, they were.
No, that's interesting to think of Hagrid as maybe not as partial, and he's not enforcing a kind of dichotomy through his language. There is clear evil, but then there's our side, and maybe there is a little bit of immoral behavior on their side, too. They're not like the perfect shining white knights fighting against the big bad evil.
Yes, and we'll see that more throughout the series. Mm-hmm. I think J.K. Rowling herself talks about how you can't necessarily trust everything someone says, even if you want to trust that character.
Like, yes.
They might not know what's going on totally.
Yes. And then I think that calls back a little bit to the discussion we had in episode 1 about what McGonagall says to Dumbledore. That
the nobility.
That Dumbledore says, you know, Voldemort has powers that I could never have or something along those lines. And McGonagall says, only because you're too noble to use them. Again, we're seeing that not so black and white image of good and bad.
Yeah.
We also learn why Hagrid is so loyal to Dumbledore. He mentions that he was expelled and that Dumbledore took him on as the groundskeeper, and that's why he's been able to remain close to Hogwarts. And that is definitely where some of this affection for Dumbledore stems from for Hagrid.
And he says his wand is broken in half, right?
I don't know that. I think he just says that he's not allowed to use magic. Yeah, but Hagrid performs magic with his pink umbrella.
I got expelled, to tell you the truth. In me third year, they snapped me wand in half and everything. But Dumbledore let me stay on as gamekeeper. Great man, Dumbledore.
Yeah, so we learn where that comes from for Hagrid. I think it's interesting, though, that, again, in the first chapter, Dumbledore says, I would trust Hagrid with my life. So Dumbledore definitely is saying that with an awareness of Hagrid's loyalty to him. But I think it's kind of cool to think about what on Dumbledore's part might have inspired that affection for Hagrid. And we'll learn more about that again come Chamber of Secrets. But this is, I think, interesting and certainly important to the series relationship that's being set up here.
Yeah, and it's very clearly a two-way relationship.
Yes.
There's not just like, oh, Dumbledore is this great man, I really respect him.
And it's Dumbledore's like, oh, the help?
Yeah.
Which I think I mentioned that, too, that I think there's some weird classism there that Dumbledore is like, oh, well, why don't you mow the lawns? But on the other hand, that's kind of the ideal job for Hagrid.
Yeah, we'll get into more about what Hagrid does at Hogwarts
when we get to Hogwarts. But for now, the chapter kind of ends right there with Hagrid telling Harry what the truth is and letting Harry sleep under his coat.
Yeah, in the hut, by the way, with
yes.
The Dursleys.
The Dursleys go and hide in the bedroom that Vernon and Petunia were sleeping in. And Hagrid sleeps, I think, on the couch.
Probably.
Next to Harry on the floor. But Harry at least has a nice coat to wrap himself up in.
I've got some more animals in there. I've got some dormice, which I'm guessing he was feeding the owl with in his pocket.
Yep. Hagrid's going to pull some more stuff out of his coat in the future, but that's all right. So that wraps up the chapter for us. We do have a new segment to start this week, which is called Spell of the Week. So our spell this week is Incendio, the fire-making spell. This is the first known use of magic in the series. We do see Dumbledore using the putter outer in the first chapter, but this is the first spell, I think, that we're kind of seeing. Hagrid notably does not say the word Incendio, suggesting that Hagrid knows how to use nonverbal spells, which is a skill that Harry, I think, tries and fails to learn in these books. But Hagrid makes a fire, so presumably he does use Incendio.
Yes, and also this is convenient because not only is he not supposed to use spells, but he was, or not only was he expelled, and but he's not supposed to use spells.
Expelled.
Okay, yeah, so he was expelled and he's not supposed to use spells. So it's impressive that he still learned to use the nonverbal spells. And also it's convenient that he did, because right. he can hide that he's actually
yes,
using
spells. I was going to say that it might have been a matter of utility, that if somebody's hearing Hagrid use spells, they're going to be like, wait a second. But if weird things happen, it's a kind of like, well, I can't use magic, so... Like most of the spells in the Harry Potter series, this comes from Latin, from incendium, meaning fire, which is also the title of an Adventure Time episode. So go watch Adventure Time. Not too much to say about incendio, honestly. It makes fire.
Yeah,
that's that.
I don't know if it sets things on fire or it just makes fire there.
There wasn't really fire out of the wand.
I don't know. There wasn't really anything in the fire pit to set on
fire. There were like some old chip bags.
Yeah, which they had already tried and failed to set on fire.
Yeah, but Hagrid does it successfully in a matter of seconds, so we can assume that Hagrid used magic.
Or he's just a really skilled Boy Scout.
I think probably both. And so that wraps up Spell of the Week. So now we're going to move into email. We have a new email from our friend PK, who sent us an email last episode. So thank you again, PK.
Yes, thank you.
And he writes, "Hey, Joe and Cassie. Episode 3 is great as usual. I must confess, I went ahead and read till the 5th chapter. The book is so engrossing," which we talked about this last episode, but we're so happy that people are reading the series with us and getting wrapped up in it. We totally understand and people are moving much faster than us.
I promise I won't hold it against you.
Yeah. he says, "The background music at the start and the end of the podcast is very good. Also looking forward to the Spell of the Week segment." He says, "I've been busy this week anyway. Bye, guys. Best wishes, PK." So thank you for listening and, you know, carving out time in your day and your busy schedule to listen to two dummies talking about Harry Potter. But thank you for the compliment on the background music, because you have no idea how much work went into that.
Way too much, really.
I spent a long time preparing to do this podcast before we started the podcast. And I'd say about half of that was spent on the website and the other half was spent on the music. because, you know, you don't want to just blatantly infringe on copyright and use the Warner Brothers Harry Potter Hedwig's theme. The do, 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 do. That was terrible. But you know what it is. So I actually did a little searching and found out that John Williams has been accused of ripping off a piece of classical music for Hedwig's theme. Oh, God, I wish I could remember the title of it.
Just Google it. Yeah, a computer in front of you. Uh-huh. Before this revelation, though,
there we go.
We went through quite a few other options, including songs from the Game Boy game.
The Game Boy Color adaptation of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, which I stand by is, my hand to God, first of all, one of the best video games I've ever played, and certainly one of the best Harry Potter video games. I very highly recommend it. But
it was okay. I don't like the fighting style.
It's very much Final Fantasy fighting style, which the old turn-based Final Fantasy, not the hot garbage they're serving up in Final Fantasy 15. But Williams has been accused of ripping off Silly Scene OP78 by Fower Gabriel.
It's a very catchy title.
Yeah, we know a lot about classical music here. So I took that, found a MIDI online of it, resequenced it to use a music box and Celestia, which is the primary instrument used in Hedwig's theme, sped it up a little bit and played with it for the intro and outro to this podcast. So a little behind the scenes look for you. but a lot of work went into that, and I'm very glad that people appreciate it. And of course, big kudos to Joe for doing the don't move a muscle bit, which is one of the preparations that we had to do for this podcast, of course, was coming up with a name, and Joe gets the credit for Podtrificus Totalis. And I think a couple days after you had suggested that, you were like, if we do Podtrificus Totalis, we can start it with this. And I think that's what solidified the choice in our mind.
Yeah, we went through quite a few different options.
We did.
And I finally won you over with, I think it was a slightly different catchphrase, but
yeah,
it was the same general idea.
Yeah. So we're big nerds, the end. So that wraps up our episode for the day. We do encourage other people, PK is welcome to email us again in the future, but we encourage others as well to send us an email to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. You can also reach us through social media. We're on Twitter @podtrificus, on Facebook, and on Tumblr. We have a website, podtrificustotalis.com, where you can find detailed show notes, listen to the episodes, and that's it. There's a transcript for episode 1, but that has quickly disappeared for the other episodes, that effort.
Yeah, maybe we'll do it for another big chapter.
We'll do it for every 10 chapters. This is kind of a big chapter, though.
No, it's definitely a big chapter. It's the first chapter we hear the word wizard,
yes,
which I thought was very impressive.
And Hogwarts.
And Hogwarts, yes. Yeah.
So that wraps us up this week. Thank you all for listening, and you can join us next week for Chapter 5.
Diagon Alley.